Welcome in, everybody. Welcome in. It is time for Three Guys Before the Game. Thanks so much for being with us. This is episode 83 of Three Guys Before the Game, and we go back to three guys. Last two shows, we actually went four, which was a visual difficulty there. If you looked at the picture of our show, and there's four guys, and the show said three guys. It was a little, but anyway, Kercheval has begun his legislative duties, and ladies and gentlemen, moving in to our third spot, he is back. It's his season. Nathan Adrian joins us on the program. Nathan, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Tony.
Senator is here as well, Brad Howe, on our program today. We will jump into Mountaineer basketball in detail, and I don't know, I'm at a loss for words, to be quite honest with you, right? We've been doing this a long time, and what happened last night in Manhattan, Kansas, I think you have to dig, and I don't know where you go to find the last time West Virginia had one get away from it like it did against Kansas State, up by 21 points early second half, to see it go away and lose the opportunity to get your first league win. So West Virginia's now 0-3 in the league with Oklahoma State coming in. We'll talk about that coming up and break down last night's game as well. Before we do that, we're going to begin with the news of the day here in Morgantown and really the state of West Virginia. And really, Weirton to Welch, Martinsburg to Matewan, all points in between, anywhere there's Mountaineer fans. And that is the formal announcement and formal introduction of Neil Brown as West Virginia's new head football coach, the 35th coach in school history. Senator, you've been on both sides of this fence, and you've seen press conferences and prepared for press conferences, and we always talk about winning the press conference. So now put your school teacher's hat on. Give a grade to Neil Brown on his press conference.
I'll do a couple things. I'll give it a grade of an A+, and I will say, if you want to use a score analogy, they just ran it up. It's 56-0, and he was throwing the ball late in the fourth in that one. I tell you what, guys, seriously, he did as well as you could possibly do in a press conference, in my opinion, both on the stuff that jumped out at you and the stuff that you kind of look at, as you mentioned. If we've done this for a long time and you read between the lines and kind of look behind the curtain there a little bit, he was outstanding. He nailed it. Shane Lyons has talked so much about fit. As you watched him today, that's what came to mind. This guy fits here, not only in the way he sounds, but in his command of what he was talking about. You can tell he's done it, right? Shane said he wanted somebody that had head coaching experience. You could see this was a guy that wasn't reaching for things to say today. He wasn't reaching for his mottos. He wasn't reaching for his core values. It was, here's what I'm about. Here's what I do. Here's how I build a program. Here's the off the field stuff. Here's the football philosophy stuff. He had all that. And then the cherry on top was mixing in perfectly all of the things from the past. Don Nealon, former players. A little thing that turns into a big thing, he said gold and blue, right? As we know how important that is. It's a couple words. That's a big thing when you mess that up. He got gold and blue. So just on and on down the line, I thought overall, really, that's winning the press conference about as well as you can win the press conference.
The thing that stood out to me that you kind of alluded to is that there was a genuine sincerity in everything that he said. A lot of days, a lot of times in these settings, people become puppets, parrots, so to speak, and try to say the right things, although in their heart they might not feel exactly what's coming out of their mouth, but they know they need to say that thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that at all from him. It seemed all to be sincere and genuine, and I agree with you. And you're a hard grader, so you go A+. Someone said that was there, said he hit it over the wall, and while the ball was in the air, there was a train going behind the outfield wall. The ball went into one of the box cars, and it just kept going down the track, and it never stopped. And I agree. I think that it's a great hire.
It's a heck of an off season now for the football program, for the athletic department, and for fans. As I've talked from the beginning of this, I thought one of the very best things about the coaching change at this time was a chance to reunite everybody and bring all Mountaineer fans under a big giant tent. That has happened with the hiring. That happened again today at the press conference. And it will continue now for this 8-month honeymoon period before West Virginia has to play a game. Neil Brown will be fantastic on the Mountaineer Athletic Club circuit when he goes around every group he's in front of. Mountaineer fans all pulling in the same direction. So it's really the ideal scenario, and not every school every time gets the ideal scenario when changing coaches. We've seen that here at West Virginia. This is one where it is an ideal scenario for the next 8 months.
It brought about so much togetherness that the Adrian clan is now back in, right? I mean, he's this guy over here. He's back in now. You're a happy guy now. You're a smiling guy. The family's all back in.
Family took a little hiatus.
They're back in.
But that's the majority. We'll see. I mean, that's the majority of people. It's easy. Early on, it's easy to like Neil Brown. It's easy to like what he stands for. And that's what's so important at this stage of the game. Again, we're going to move past saying gold and blue correctly pretty quickly when that ball gets kicked off. But for right now and moving forward, those are all the things you want. And it's easy to get behind this guy at this point if you're a Mountaineer fan, in my opinion.
Yeah. And we'll talk, obviously, more about it in the days, weeks, months to come, because now all the pieces have to come in together. You're going to start hearing about, okay, who's on the staff. Those announcements will be coming out, and you'll start to see all the pieces come together. So we'll get into that. And without question, it was a big, big successful start. All right, going from successful to unsuccessful, we turn our topic to basketball. WVU had never been 0-2 in the Big 12 up until last Saturday when they lost to Texas. And obviously, if you've never been 0-2, you've never been 0-3. And last night in Manhattan, it did not look as though West Virginia was going to be 0-3. It looked as though they were on their way to 1-2, coming home to take on Oklahoma State Saturday in Morgantown. And if you really wanted to jump two steps ahead, you go, okay, got this one, go Oak State, you're 2-2. Guess what? You're 500, and off we go. And it didn't happen. And I don't even know where we start to begin with what's going on here, because it is it's uncharted territory, to be quite honest with you. At this point, to see this team doing what it did, 17 turnovers last night, 11 of those in the second half. Off of the 17 turnovers, Kansas State scored 25 of its 71 points. So almost a third of its points came off of West Virginia turnovers. And, well, actually, that is more than a third.
35%.
Yeah, 35%. Yeah. And then the foul shooting again. West Virginia in the second half goes 6 out of 12 from the foul line. And you say, here, Kansas State, you want this? Here, take the game. It's all yours. So I don't know where we're going
to
go.
There's a lot of things to dive into. I'll let Nate take that first when we get on the court. I think just big picture, what you said, you know what really showed up here, and I think we've known this for the last few years, but it's masked a little bit by West Virginia's success. We've known this is a really balanced league. Talked about it. Even though Kansas has won it a ridiculous 14 straight times, top to bottom, this never felt, there's no teams where it's ever felt like you're going in like, got it. All right, there's no Rutgers hanging around there, quite frankly. All due respect to Rutgers. There's no Rutgers in this league. But West Virginia generally, especially for the last three seasons, came out on top more often than it didn't. So we could walk away going, yeah, it's a really tough league. It's really balanced. But West Virginia won, move on to the next one. This is kind of the first time where it's been flipped upside down. And you see how closely it's grouped together. Texas Tech, the only undefeated team. West Virginia was right there in that game and could have won that. So West Virginia has lost to the one undefeated team in the league. They have a loss closely to the middle of the pack in Texas. And now they have a loss to another team in the bottom third of the league. Could have been 3-0. Pretty easily. I know you always do woulda, coulda, shoulda. Only a couple plays from 3-0, 2-1, but they're not. They're 0-3. So there's a lot of things I know we'll dive into, but just big picture, that kind of jumped out to me for the first time, is it backs up the balance in the league and how thin of a margin, how small the line is between you're staring at 0-3 and you're at the top giggling at everybody because you're 3-0.
When you were running around out there, did you realize how fragile and how close wins and losses were, Nate?
Absolutely. These games in the Big 12 are decided by two or three possessions. And whenever you're averaging 17 turnovers a game and only causing 10, and you have a minus 7 turnover ratio, you're going to lose a lot of those close games. It's all about possessions and taking advantage of possessions, and we are definitely not doing it at this point.
When you watched last night's game, I think all of us in the first half sat there and said, wow, this team is playing, you know, extremely well, extremely efficient. And then you basically got the polar opposite, at least defensively, from West Virginia in the second half. What do you think, Nate, was the biggest difference, first half, second half, as far as stopping Kansas State from scoring? They got 21 points in the first half. They got 50 in the second half.
The difference was Barry Brown getting the ball into the paint and kicking out the open shooters. We weren't making it difficult on him. He was going right every single time, getting to the basket, scoring 20 points in the second half alone. I don't know how many assists he had, but that he's the reason they were getting wide open shots, because when he drove it, forced us to double him, help in, and then he kicked it out to wide open shooters, and they started making shots. It's hard to believe that we gave up 50 points to a team that only had one field goal in the first 9 minutes of the game, and that was a goaltend. That's not a good team. Kansas State is not a good team, especially without Dean Wade, and we're giving up 50 points and a half.
So if you were out there last night and Barry Brown was trying to do what he was doing, what was the way to shut him down?
It's not too hard to defend him. He likes to go right. He's only going to go right. You make him go left, he can't pass, he can't finish. That completely takes him away. I know for a fact that was on the scouting report that you have to make him go left, or else he's going to do exactly what he did against us.
So, okay, so it seems so simple then. If I'm guarding him, I'm lined up against him, I'm going to cheat my backside off and just keep going to his right to make him go to the left and just basically angle him off. Why is that hard to do for our guys?
It shouldn't be, but it's. I think it's just a lack of caring. I mean,
you really think that?
It has to be. What else? What else would make you deliberately not do what you need to do to make somebody stop? To stop somebody? And what else? They're physically able to. Wes Harris is physically able to keep him from going right. He's proven that he can guard pretty much anybody on a court. So why didn't he?
Yeah. He was a spectator a lot of the game. He's off to a really slow start. He's got 14 fouls in the first three league games. So fouled out of twice. Fouled out of two games.
So if you look at this, and obviously you're 0-3, there's a multitude of problems or issues that need to get fixed moving forward. Is that far and away number one right now? You lose the two-time National Defensive Player of the Year that's a single-person stopper when you need it, and there hasn't been a defensive stopper emerge? I mean, I feel like this isn't the first time we've sat here and said player X, fill in the blank, just went bananas. Go back to starting the season at Buffalo, where there's an individual that just goes above and beyond, doesn't just have a nice game or hit their average or go a couple, but a guy that absolutely goes bananas. Does it start and stop right now with just a single guy saying, I'm going to be the defensive stopper, let's go?
It starts there. It certainly doesn't stop there, though. Defense is a team, as much as a team activity as offense is. Everybody has to work together for rotations to help. It's not like Javon never got beat. It's not like Javon was on their best player every single possession. In the Big 12 tournament one year when we played Buddy Hield, Dax guarded Buddy. Didn't let him catch the ball the entire game. He ended up with 6 points. So, no, that wasn't Javon. That was someone else. Someone else can step up and do it. It's just a matter of who's going to do it, and you have to do it every game. Wes Harris has done it throughout the year. For some reason, he didn't last night.
15 games in. Is it too late this season for this team to start playing championship-level defense? Or, let me rephrase, Bob Huggins defense?
No, we've showed that we can play defense. It's not like we've played terrible defense in the first two conference games where they have 61 and 62 points. It's not like that's bad numbers in the Big 12. Big 12 is a very good league, a lot of good offensive. So if you're averaging 61 points a game, giving up 61 points a game, you're not a bad defensive team. But to give up 50 to the worst offensive team, that's a lack of effort. You've proven that you can do it against the best team and give up 62 points. The fact that you gave up 50 to the worst offensive team is nothing but a lack of effort.
No Kanate a factor, though, as well, right? On individual, you could get beat the last couple of years, and he's there to eliminate 3, 4, 5 mistakes a game. You just don't have that right now. Guys were just getting straight to the basket with nobody disrupting that move.
Yes, but again, I'll reiterate that early in the year, we were giving up more points than we did in the first two Big 12 games without him. So we were playing better team defense without him in the last three games than we did in the beginning of the year. We were playing the best defense of the year without him because everyone else was buying in and doing their job. For some reason, in the second half last night, it didn't happen.
You were, unfortunately, part of some of these losses that West Virginia had at Kansas, where you're in total control, and then the momentum swings, and it's like looking down a road, and here comes a wave that you know you can't outrun. What happens mentally when a team puts on a run like that? What goes on? When you sensed it, when you saw it, what was happening?
It's basketball is a big game about confidence. If you think the ball's going to go in the hole more than not, it's going to. And that's why you see a lot of shooters go through bad streaks, because they get messed up mentally and then they get a little screwed up. Losing a lead at Kansas and losing a lead at Kansas State is a completely different thing. There were 8,000 people there last night. In Kansas, there's going to be 18,000, and that makes a big difference. It gets loud. The court literally shakes. That makes a big difference. It gets in the ref's head. That's why people think there's a bias. I'm sure there might be a little bit, but you got 18,000 people screaming at you. It's hard to concentrate on making the right call. You're just going to make a call, and that's not always going to be right.
There was one possession or two possessions last night, second half, when their run had begun, and they went full court press, and West Virginia was advancing the ball and did not get it over midcourt. Those, to me, were like the two possessions that stood out that energized Kansas State to the point where we go like, we're going to win this game, and West Virginia went, we might lose this game. Like, right in that sequence there, you went like, whoa.
Well, those are those soul crushers, right? West Virginia has used that to its advantage over the last few years. When West Virginia would get that wave behind it and then start clamping down, that's a whole different ballgame than missing shots. That's like, I start to panic there a little bit.
Yeah.
But so now it's happening in reverse. That's the challenge.
Yeah, where do we go, Mr. Nathan? Hugs said after the game, you might take the red shirt off of Trey Dooms. He says he's the most athletic guy that we have. They can get the ball to the rim.
I'm not going to sit here and say Huggs is wrong about that, but I don't think he's our savior by any means.
No.
Nothing's going to help us until the entire team decides to buy into the ideas and concepts of the coaches and stop trying to resist what they want to do.
When you watch them, what are they resisting?
That's a tough question. I don't exactly know because I'm not in the locker room. If you're in the locker room,
you know how it's supposed to look. And so when you look at it and go like, well, they're not doing this. What is it that they're consistently not doing?
They're consistently not putting pressure on the ball. You can tell that. They're only causing 10 turnovers a game. Even if you're not pressing, that's not very good because you're not putting pressure on the ball. You're not making them make mistakes. So that's part of it. It's all effort. I keep harping on it, but it's all effort that our problem is. We're not losing games by 20 or 30. We're losing them by one or two. And it's because of the one or two possessions that somebody takes a playoff, somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to do, and gives up a bucket or turns the ball over that leads to a bucket.
Yeah, and you can't stress ball pressure enough, because when you've got ball pressure on the guard that's trying to initiate the offense and you make him really work hard to make a pass, it throws everything off. It throws their timing. It throws their shot clock off. It makes them hurried. And that's ball pressure. But if you don't get up on them and then we're able to run their sets, obviously they got a better chance of scoring the ball.
Yeah, it is. And it's exactly like, I can relate this to football. If you got a bad secondary, the only way you're going to combat a good passing offense is to blitz, put pressure on the quarterback, make them make quick decisions that could lead to bad plays and turnovers. It's the same concept. If you make somebody uncomfortable, they're going to mess up.
Mentioned those turnovers, 17-6 last night. That's the fewest for a West Virginia Big 12 opponent since 2014. Baylor had 4. It's the fewest of any opponent since 2012 Virginia Tech. So that was a massive gap, but it's also historical in some respects. That just doesn't happen to West Virginia like that. You mentioned the 35% of Kansas State's points came off turnovers. That's what they do, right? They had scored 33% of their points all season off turnovers. They were right in line, and they were plus 15 in that category. So if you're wanting to point to something statistically that you could also see happening readily on the court, go right to those turnovers.
Something else statistically that's bad is our turnover, our assist to turnover ratio is 0.5 in the Big 12. We have 24 assists to 51 turnovers.
Yeah, it's impossible.
That's really, really bad.
Impossible. And what's the most ironic thing about it is that what was your brand going into the season? Press Virginia, and yet you're turning it over more than you're forcing the turnover. That's the wild part about it. So yeah. West Virginia has literally gone from one extreme to the next.
Yeah.
They're going from the team that was forcing the most turnovers to the team that's giving the ball away the most. That's a recipe for failure, and that's why they're sitting here right now.
And you haven't been good enough offensively to mask those problems on the other end, where in past years you have been. you've been able to overcome. How many times do we sit here and talk about the long scoring droughts? But you were still able to win games because you could hang in there defensively. Right now, you're not producing offensively enough, although last night there were some glimmers of hope there. But overall, you have not been able to mask that.
Which now we'll fall back to the one crutch that we do have. When we have to talk about something positive, you got to go Derek Culver. So dig into the record books, and that would be something fun to do. I haven't done it yet. So show me a guy. This was his fifth game, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was third league game, and then he played two non-league games. He played Jacksonville State and Lehigh plus Three Lakes, so five games in. And he's putting up massively impressive numbers. He goes 17 points, 12 rebounds, 34 minutes. Seven of his 12 rebounds were on the offensive glass. I mean, they were Adrian-esque offensive rebounding numbers. So you got yourself a little something there. Now, what do you do with it?
Keep going. But again, somebody else has to emerge with him because you're putting the bulk of this team here on a freshman, which we know what that usually looks like for a freshman in the season. There's going to be some ups and downs. He hasn't hit the down yet. You mentioned those 12 rebounds. That was nearly a third of the total for West Virginia. The seven offensive rebounds were obviously huge. So he continues to look really good. Now, who's going to join him? Last night, part of why you were so close, you had those three scorers again. How often do we talk about that? Jermaine Haley was a positive last night, getting a career-high 13. We've talked about he has to look to score. Not only does he have to score, he has to first look to score to become a threat. He did that last night and got you some points. Welcome back, Lamont West. Right? When he hits three-pointers, that changes and that helps. So you were almost there, which led to an almost win. We're back to consistency. Aren't we back to consistency again? You've got to go take this performance and replicate it Saturday with a little bit better and try and get the win. Consistent.
Yeah, and Jermaine proved in the multitude of ways that he can score. If he gets the ball on the block against a smaller guard, he is very capable of putting his shoulder on him and getting the layup up and in. He made a three. He's made two threes now. It's not something he's going to necessarily shoot all the time, but he can shoot it well enough that they have to respect him and can't sit in the lane while he's standing out there dribbling the ball. And that's the important part. When he's in there, his defender can't be just a help guy.
Right.
So that's the importance of him having to score.
Going back to Derek Culver, you said it right. He had a third of West Virginia's defensive rebounds. He had half of West Virginia's offensive rebounds. West Virginia had 14 offensive rebounds, and Derek Culver had seven of those. And when you look around, if you're his teammates, you got to be looking at yourself and going like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Right? Guys that have played a lot more basketball can't put the numbers up that the freshman's putting up. And I talked to Hugs about this earlier today. I don't know if you could really pick it up watching the game on television. First half, McCall Mayween, their center for Kansas State, who's been playing really well, and Hugs said before the game started, he goes, that's the guy that worries me more than anyone on this Kansas State team. He's a big, he's been playing, he can shoot 15-foot shot and go inside. So he tries on two occasions to back down Culver in the paint. And he might as well have just had a brick wall behind him and tried to push the wall down. He didn't budge. You could see on his face while he was backing in that he's going like, what in the heck is behind me? Because normally guys stick their butt back there and they can make some space, get some movement back there and do what they want to do, drop step, put it up, whatever they want to do. Couldn't move them. And I think Culver got a block on one and the other one just like it went just awry. And I said to myself, I have not seen that. We've seen a lot of good centers. Devin Williams, right? He was a big, strong guy. Canate is a big, strong guy, blocks a lot of shots. They can back people down. This kid is an absolute horse truck. And you just hope that everything continues to go well for him as far as showing up on time, going to class, doing everything, because it would be a real, real sad story now that he's got this thing cooking if something takes him off of the path. But he's been, attentive, and he's been focused. And I'm talking to Hugs again earlier today, and he said that he had a conversation with him, and he said, Derek, what's the biggest thing you're doing now that's changed you from what you were doing? He said, I'm doing what I'm told to do. And he goes, right, that's the difference. Your attitude.
Nate, you mentioned earlier how important confidence is. He's got to have a boatload of it right now. I would think that makes it easier to come out each day and be looking forward to games when you're saying, hey, I'm putting up a double-double here. I can clearly play at this level. Let's go. Let's go to work because things are working right now.
Yeah, but he's still only in his fifth game. He doesn't have the confidence that you think, even though he's putting up the numbers, it's still not what he is completely capable of doing. I think he can be better than what he is, even is now. He's showing flashes of it, but imagine once he gets comfortable in the system, knows the offense, knows when to do what and all that good stuff, he's going to be an extremely good player. And like you said, he's had a good attitude since he has came back from his suspension. And if that continues, I think he's going to do nothing but improve.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But, guys, who around the program would have predicted in his fifth game he'd not only give you a double-double, he's close to averaging a double-double, but never even mind that. Would he have given you 34 minutes in a game? Could he have gotten 34 minutes of run in his fifth game? How many people would have taken that a month ago?
I would have told month ago or before the season?
Either.
Well, think about this, Nate.
Month ago, I didn't know if he was going to play or not.
Right.
So, forget that.
But 34 minutes for that's a lot of minutes there.
Well, that's my point. When was the last time West Virginia had a freshman getting 34 minutes? You don't play those guys at 260 pounds. It's not like a guard that could run all day.
If he was just out there playing 34 minutes, that would be something to hang on to. The fact he's clearly your best player right now is a whole nother level.
All right.
He is by far the fastest person on the team at 260 pounds.
It's absolutely amazing. Our program, this edition of Three Guys Before the Game, is brought to us in part by BetLucky. BetLucky makes sports betting easy. BetLucky is the very first online sports betting app in the state of West Virginia. It lets anyone over the age of 21 with a smartphone get in on the action, and you must be in the state of West Virginia to wager. BetLucky right now giving you 2x your first bet back in bonus money up to $20. And when you're searching in the App Store, all you have to do is look for BetLucky, all one word, BetLucky. Select an affiliate casino, either Wheeling Island or Mardi Gras, and when you cash out, you transfer that back to your bank account or visit the casinos in person to get your winnings. So check it out. Download it now. It's ready to go. Bet Lucky, and all games are regulated by the West Virginia Lottery. Please play responsibly, and it's nice to have the folks from Bet Lucky on with us as a sponsor of Three Guys Before the Game.
Speaking of that line, Kansas did not cover. They were 4-point favorites, but the over did hit. 128 was the over-under number. Went above that. A little surprising.
And it certainly didn't look as though it was going to when they had 3 points.
It did not.
No,
right?
It did not.
Did not have. It looked everything like a 50-point game like we had talked about going into it. So now on Saturday, West Virginia against Oklahoma State. Do you know which team has had the most success in the Big 12 at the Coliseum?
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State. They're 4-2. Beautiful. Just what West Virginia needs right now. And they showed earlier this week, right? And they've shown that they can win games. Although people are saying Oak State's going to be the team that finishes last. Right now, West Virginia's dead last. So I don't know what you better get
it. It's the same conversation we had heading into the Kansas State game, right? Both teams need to win. Oklahoma State's going to stare at this and say two things. They're going to say, that's a winnable game. We go in and get an 0-3 team. But if you're West Virginia, you say the same thing on your end. This is caged animals back into the corner here. Someone's got to come out and get a win.
Yeah. They need a performance. They need a pit performance is what they need. Let's face it, the last time they were in a similar situation just as far as the mojo goes was going into that pit game. And they rallied themselves up, and they played extremely well, extremely hard. Obviously, Sagabaugh Kanate was involved in that game. Kanate going to the doctor tomorrow, and we'll get another update as to what the status is there. I did have clarification with Bob Huggins. Huggs doesn't think he plays again this year, but he says that's far from definitive. He says my personal opinion is that he doesn't, but I don't know. And I think probably we'll get a lot better idea once he has another doctor visit here and see what the situation and what the status is. So time will tell. Tip-off set for high noon. West Virginia, Oklahoma State. Then things get a lot easier. On the road on Monday, play Tuesday against TCU at TCU. So it's just basically it's a walk in the park.
Can't wait to go to Tennessee.
All right, we'll record again on Monday. That'll be episode 84, but the music's on, which means episode 83 is into the book. Thanks so much, and thanks to our new sponsor, Bet Lucky. Check it out. Go to the App Store and put on your phone, Bet Lucky. For Nate Adrian and the Senator, Brad Howe. I'm Tony Caridi. Thanks for being with us. Episode 83, Three Guys Before the Game. Over, out, see ya.